Well, we are spending a few weeks in Mark's Gospel, looking through his account of the life of Jesus. And I don't know if you've ever thought, if you were one of the disciples and you got to that point where you were asked to write down some of the things that you had seen, you had witnessed in walking around with Jesus, what would you have written down? Inspired by the Holy Spirit, and we're pretty sure drawing on a lot of Peter's account, Peter's eyewitness account, Mark writes down these things that we've been looking at in his gospel. And he wrote them down for a reason, because the people who were going to read what he wrote, we're sure, were facing extreme persecution, even horrible death. As we read this very precise, punchy, short gospel, what were these people getting out of that as they sat and listened to someone read it to them? How was it encouraging them as they faced these great difficulties? When you read through Mark, it's like sometimes he's in a real rush to get as much down as possible, and yet all the things that he writes seem to be placed in a very careful and precise order, and the events are there with a real purpose. But as you read, you also get the sense that each episode, each event that he has chosen to record leads you to the one conclusion that is confessed by Peter as you get to around about chapter 8, that Jesus is the Christ. And then finally, when Jesus is on the cross, the Roman centurion, the very symbol of the enemy of the people who are reading this this gospel account, this centurion stands there and says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." And Mark's gospel is inevitably leading to that confession. He starts it off that way, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And then each of these events just draws you further and further to that conclusion. Surely this man was the Son of God. From there he takes those believers to the resurrection of the Son of God, who served and suffered and is now a risen Lord, who lives to give hope to those who will follow him, whether in Roman times or now, 2014. Throughout the ages that follow, people have read through Mark's gospel and they've heard the same account that we're going to listen to even this morning, and it's encouraged them in their faith, and I pray that that is what happens to us with us this morning. And the message is the same no matter what period of time you find yourself reading this little gospel account. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And what will your response be to that fact? What will you do with that knowledge? Will you reject that truth or allow it to shape you as a disciple of Jesus and submit to him as Lord of your life? Mark seems to enjoy taking his readers on a real roller coaster ride. One moment there's incredible events happening. Next moment everything seems to be very calm and steady as Jesus is teaching, using parables and things like that. No sooner has Jesus finished a confrontation with the Pharisees, he's teaching the crowds in a boat, and his disciples, using the most gentle of ways with these parables and pictures of ordinary life to help make his point. Then we come to the passage that we're going to look at today, and extraordinary things happen, unbelievable things that we will see today. Following a long day of teaching, which Mark only records a fraction, I'm sure, of what happened in that day. Many other things happened as that day went on. An exhausted Jesus needs rest, so he asks to be taken to the other side of the lake, to a place where he can find a little refuge and rest from the crowd. But this is the beginning of these next series of dips and unbelievable things as he goes across the lake. He faces the most formidable things that people of that period and probably even today fear. I'm sure they would fear them. Disaster, demons, disease, and death. These four things. Probably if you ask people, what do you fear the most? They probably wouldn't say demons today. But back in those days, it was very common. Nature at its wildest, at its most unpredictable. Fearsome. Fearsome. People feared it. In a contest against these forces, Jesus will show that he is the Christ, the Son of God. And we're going to read some of these things from Mark chapter 4 to the end of Mark chapter 5. Starting in verse 35 of Mark chapter 4. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up and waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind and said, "Quiet, be still." The wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Remarkable story. Remarkable thing. Having completed a full day of teaching, Jesus, in all his humanity, he needs a rest. He's exhausted. He needs to rest. He sees an opportunity to get away from the crowds by getting in a boat and going to the other side of the lake. He needed to get away. Jesus is given the honoured place in the stern of the boat with a cushion to rest on. And I just like to imagine that before they've even pushed off to get away, his head is on the pillow and he is asleep instantly. I think he is that tired. He's that worn out. As they cross the lake, though, things change very quickly. The experienced sailors on the boat struggle against a furious storm. Now, these storms, you think, on a lake, how bad can it be? They can get pretty bad. And remember, these are very, very experienced fishermen. They are used to these conditions, but this is something else. Waves are breaking over the boat. It's threatening to be swamped completely, possibly to sink. And they panic. They panic. They're terrified of what is going to happen. "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" This is what they wake Jesus up with. It's not a, "Have you got a moment, Lord? Do you want to come and have a look at this? This is really, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" That's the urgency. There's no niceties about it. They wake him up like this. Within moments of waking, Jesus has taken in the whole situation. Within moments, it's real to him what's going on. The panic-stricken sailors, the boat filling with water, the wild storm, the huge waves, and he immediately acts. Now, I don't know if you've seen pictures of this. Artists like to depict this scene, and it's always very dramatic, a little bit romantic. Jesus standing in the middle of the boat. His arm is usually out like this. Around him, there's these huge waves. People may have fallen overboard and have been. I've got an image of that. Somebody being dragged back into the boat. It's very dramatic, and they did what they thought was the best thing to depict that image in these pictures. But I like to think it's a little bit different. Jesus is simply standing in the boat, and he just uses his voice, and he commands the sea to be still. It says it's a rebuke. It's like, "Sit, stop, finish," like that. And it's just one word. Okay, maybe a little louder, but that's what I like to think happened. The literal translation of the words here are to be muzzled. To be muzzled. to be in control, to be controlled. And that's what Jesus does. But the fear in his disciples' hearts and minds is quickly replaced by a different fear. They're terrified of what they have just witnessed. They've just seen a man stand up in a boat and tell a storm to be quiet. Would you be terrified of that? I think I would. I think I would. Because who is this type of power and authority reserved for? Who do they know from their history who does this? Only God. Only God does this sort of thing. Only God speaks and nature is created. Only God speaks and sees part so a nation can walk through it. Only God speaks and earthquakes happen. Only God speaks and the sun stands still in the sky. And Jesus stood up in a boat and did what God does. I'd be terrified too. What they saw wasn't just a demonstration of power. It was a revelation of what they know to be the authority and power of God in this man. Now, maybe they kind of believed that before. They believe it now. They've just witnessed Jesus do what God does. Mark's confession of Jesus Christ being the Son of God just received a massive boost in their minds. What do you do with that kind of information? What do you think Jesus did next? The story goes on and we'll pick it up in a minute. Did he lie back down again and go back to sleep? Was he rested enough? He questioned them first. He questioned them about their faith. And you might think to yourself, well, that's a bit harsh, because who else has ever seen anything like this? Jesus wanted his disciples to move on in their faith in him. They needed Jesus to do something. They woke him up because they wanted him to do something. Jesus wanted them to have a kind of faith where he didn't even need to be woken up. Jesus is in this boat. We're going to be fine. Stop. And they could have calmed the storm themselves. He wanted them to have that kind of faith. And later on, they'll have that. They will. Peter and John will walk down the road and they'll see a crippled man and they'll heal him. There'll be people who will have demons and evil spirits in them and they'll cast them out. But they don't have that just yet. They needed Jesus to do something. But when the storm is calmed, the journey continues. They cross the lake and they reach their destination, where Jesus meets perhaps the most pathetic, miserable character, perhaps in even all the Bible. And Mark's description in the first few verses of chapter 5 is so vivid and heart-wrenching of this poor, unfortunate man. In verse 1 of chapter 5, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. It's got about 10 different names, but that's what I'll do. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs. No one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. They tried. They tried. How bad is that? For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. I'm sure if Jesus had seen this man first, I've no doubt he would have had compassion on the man and done something to relieve his suffering. But in fact, it's the evil spirit within the man that recognises Jesus as he gets off the boat and compels the man from quite some distance away to come down and confront Jesus. And there's a reason for that. This is not a meeting of great hope. This is not a meeting of great hope for this man. This spirit, this evil spirit, recognises who Jesus is. And the spirit is terrified of Jesus. Probably a different terrified to the disciples who are in the boat. But this spirit is terrified of Jesus. Jesus' initial direction for the spirit to leave the man apparently is ignored. So Jesus addresses the spirit when he finds out its name. Its name is Legion, because they are many. Now, in some ancient cultures, the use of a person's name in a formal sense is a tactic used to get the upper hand, to give you a position of strength and power in a confrontation or in a conversation. The Spirit himself had tried to do this with Jesus. He recognized Jesus immediately. He used Jesus' name. But of course, Jesus was no ordinary human, and it didn't have any impact on the King of Kings. Jesus is not intimidated like an ordinary person is. But realizing this, the evil spirit is soon begging Jesus not to be sent out of the area, not to be sent away. In a demonstration of his authority, which emphasizes again that Jesus is completely in control of the destiny of the evil spirit, Jesus allows them to enter the pigs that are grazing nearby on a hillside. There's 2,000 pigs. I don't know if you've ever seen 2,000 pigs in one place. I've never seen it. It must be quite a large gathering of pigs. And then to witness that rushing of pigs down the hillside into the lake where they drown. What an awful sight. What a horrendous sight. If I told this story to kids at school, they would be laughing their heads off. I mean, it's just funny to kids to think 2,000 pigs running down a hill into a lake and drowning. They would just find that funny. But, you know, probably like all of you, I get upset when I see animals in distress, you know, bushfires and things like that. It's horrendous to watch that. And to think of 2,000 pigs just running down the hill into this lake and drowning, it is distressing. It's upsetting. So why did it have to happen this way? I think the answer lies in the purpose of the two main characters, Jesus and the evil spirit. Jesus recognised that even though he could have completely destroyed the evil spirit and so revealed his complete domination over Satan and demons and things like that, that time had not yet arrived. It hadn't come. Jesus knows when that time will be and how it will take place, and it's not on the hillside of this region on the other side of the lake. It's not to happen right here. It's to happen outside of Jerusalem on another hill on a cross. That's where that will be revealed for all the world to see. So Jesus allows the evil spirits to enter the pigs because that then helps to reveal what their ultimate purpose is. Their ultimate purpose is to distort and to destroy God's creation. Look what they're doing to that man. Slowly, over many years, just trying to distort and ultimately destroy that image of God that was in that man. He was trying to cut himself with stones. He was wailing and yelling in the tombs in the hills. So not what God had created him to be like, and that's what they were trying to do. The fact that this man had resisted for so long, whereas the pigs could not resist for long at all, just reveals, of course, the ultimate goal of this evil spirit. The result is the pigs running off the edge of the bank into the river, into the lake, and drowning, because the pigs couldn't resist like a human could. But that's what that purpose was. It's horrendous to think of these things, but it was a part of life in those days. People had demons. These are things that people feared. Jesus is showing that he has got that power and authority. And again, who else has that authority? In their minds, that's reserved for God. That is reserved for the God of Israel. And here is Jesus being that. The story continues because there are reactions to what happens here. And there are two reactions from verse 14 to verse 17. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid. Everyone is afraid here. Things fill people with fear. Things that they don't understand, things that are unknown, fill them with fear. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs too. They just had to slip that in. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. If you were hearing this story for the first time, you might have expected a different response from the people of the town, even taking into account the loss of their income from 2,000 pigs that have just drowned in the lake. You might have expected perhaps that they had a different reaction to what had happened. But Mark could hardly have made it clearer that even the most powerful of miracles, calming of storms, casting out demons, even the most powerful miracle in themselves cannot bring anyone to faith. They cannot bring anyone to faith. Everything hangs on the openness of the person to see beyond the miracle to the person at the heart of it all. The people of the town failed to do that. They saw what happened and they were full of fear. Think back to the parable of the soil that Jesus had just taught people with. What kind of soil were these people? They're like the soil on the path, the hard ground, got blown away very quickly. Nothing took. Clearly they were that kind of soil. By contrast, the man sitting next to Jesus, dressed in his right mind, calm, chaos has been taken out of his life, he gets it. Why wouldn't he? He's the one who's suffered so long and now he experiences this calm in his life. He wants to come with Jesus and be one of his followers. Jesus says, no, you stay here. You stay here. Tell your family. Tell everybody in this region how merciful God has been to you. Tell them about that. Why did he do that? There are many other people that he doesn't tell that to. Oh, don't tell anybody about this. Keep this quiet. Probably wasn't coming back to that region. This is how the message of Jesus was going to get around in that place. We're not told by Mark or anybody else. But that's his command. Go and tell people how merciful God has been to you. So Jesus leaves that region and he returns to the other side of the lake where this extraordinary series of events continues. No sooner is he on the other side of the shore than the crowd is back. Now, I don't know if they saw the boats coming, recognised them. Someone came over ahead. There were other boats that said with Jesus. No sooner is he back on shore, he's surrounded by this crowd again. In the crowd is a leader of the local synagogue, Jairus. He approaches Jesus with terrible story. His daughter, about 12 years of age, is dying. And again, this man wants Jesus to do something. He has a faith. I'm sure he does. He has a faith that Jesus can help him. And he wants to take Jesus to his house. To see this happen. As a mass of people moves off, we encounter another person who has some kind of faith in Jesus. The woman who was suffering from the disease of bleeding for 12 years, she wants to meet Jesus, but not face to face. She's got this plan. I'm not going to read through all of it. I'm sure you're very familiar with the story of this woman. But she's got this plan. She's very sick. And beyond just sick, she is cut off from her community because of her illness. She's not allowed to participate in the local community because of her illness. And this has been going on for 12 years. She doesn't seek attention here. She just wants to quietly come up behind Jesus. She wants to just touch the hem of his clothes, anything that he's wearing, and she knows that she'll be healed. Each of these people has a desperate need, don't they? Each of them. Jairus, his dying daughter, this woman wants to be healed. Jesus wants to cross over all those barriers that are preventing these things from happening, particularly with this woman. Her life is very difficult. She's spent all her money, everything that she has, on trying to find a doctor who will perform something that will heal her. Interesting to note that Luke leaves that bit out of his account of that story. Dr. Luke, he doesn't like that idea, I guess. But this woman thinks Jesus is the answer to these problems that she has. So the crowd is moving along, it's jostling Jesus, people are bumping into him and people are reaching out. And this woman sees this as her opportunity. She is almost going to be incognito, she'll be disguised. I mean, she's well known. She's sort of disguised and she's hoping the crowd will shield her and she'll just come up behind Jesus and touch the clothes and she'll be right. And she's absolutely right. Her plan works to perfection. She just gets in there. Nobody's kind of around. Nobody sees her. She just touches his clothes. Instantly, she is healed. She feels it in her body. She knows she has been healed. I don't know if you've ever experienced that kind of relief where you've been so sick and you've experienced instant relief from something. The thing I could most think of was like if you have a toothache and they take that tooth out, kind of. And the other thing I thought of was a woman giving birth. You go through 48 hours of labour. May not be that long. the moment that baby is delivered, the contractions stop, the pain stops, that baby is sitting on your chest, and you know, you just feel that joy. That's what I could think of. This woman knew instantly she touched Jesus that his clothes, she was healed. Imagine the relief after 12 years of continuous suffering, enduring the hocus-pocus sort of remedies that these doctors... It wouldn't have been pleasant, the things that they'd probably told her to do, the potions and things that they you know, searching for a cure. In an instant, all that is gone. She just wants to savour that moment, I'm sure. She just wants to just relax in that moment. Just take it all in. It's over. But she's brought back to earth really quickly, because she hears Jesus ask the most ridiculous question I think he's probably ever asked. Who touched me? Who just touched me? And his disciples look around. Come on, give us a break. This guy, it was him. He did it. This little boy, this girl. Everybody's touching you, Jesus. What sort of a question is this? Look at the crowd. So many people everywhere. But Jesus insists it's important to him that he find out who this person was. People start looking around. It's only a matter of time before they recognise this woman. She's well known. Everybody knows her. And so rather than wait for someone to say it was her, she comes and falls at Jesus' feet. And she pours out the whole story to him. She tells him everything. Better to do that. Again, she's terrified. She's fearful as she does it. But Jesus is not about fear. He's all about calming these fears. He's all about taking those fears away, comforting people, even those people who oppose him. He's all about calming them. He can't let this woman go. Can't let her go away thinking that what happened was some kind of magic, mystical thing. Can't have her leaving and going and telling everybody, well, I touched his clothes and I felt this tingling sensation and, you know, it was the clothes. That Jesus can't have that happening. He has to explain what it is that has healed her. And what does he say? Go, your faith has made you well. Your faith in me, your faith that I can do this, has made you well. Not some hocus pocus magic, your faith in me. And it was really important that Jesus told that message to her, to everybody in the crowd who was listening. And one of the people who was listening was Jairus. He's still there. Remember, they're going to his house when this little incident has interfered with things. How's he feeling now? I mean, he already knows Jesus is the guy who's going to heal his daughter, but he's just witnessed this thing happen. He's feeling pretty good about things. If they can get to the house, his daughter is going to be fine. But your enthusiasm and hope are soon dashed because, you know, if you're Jairus, because these messengers come from the house, it's too late. Your daughter is dead. And then to top it off, there's this seemingly very heartless second little message from these messengers. Don't bother the teacher anymore. It's hopeless. It's finished. It's over. Wow. But Jesus again says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Another person who was fearing. Just believe. As Jairus follows along in a state of numbness, I can't begin to imagine what he's feeling, what he's thinking. They arrive at the house. There's an absolute cacophony of noise going on. People are wailing, and it's all to do with the official way they mourn in that culture. And Jesus tells them all to get out, all to go. And he tells them what he's going to do. The girl is only sleeping. And they laugh at him. They mock him. They scoff at him. Now how is Jairus feeling? He's a very important person. He's well known in the community. He's taking a huge risk even by bringing Jesus to his house. News is going to get back to people in authority that Jairus has done this. And now Jesus says she's only sleeping when everybody knows she's dead. But he has this faith. He goes into the house with Jesus and a couple of his disciples. Moments later, he's sitting in a room with his daughter and she's alive. It's all been worth it, hasn't it? It's all been worth it. The risk, the fear, the confusion, it's all been worth it because he's sitting with his daughter. Jesus says, give her something to eat. She's hungry. So even at those little details, Jesus is thinking beyond just healing her, thinking of her needs. This is a mighty working of his power. Again, a power reserved only for God. God is the only one who can create life, can bring people back from the dead. What does Jairus and his wife think? What does this little girl think of Jesus? Who is this guy? In his commentary, Donald English says that while Jesus is triumphant, he is not triumphalist. He doesn't go around starting to, you know, look at me, look at me, look at me. He doesn't glory in what he's just done. He is the Lord, but the Lord of lowly service to those in need. He is the Lord bringing calm where chaos reigns. He is the Lord taking away fear where people are frightened of so many things. People in a boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit, a desperate woman in a crowd, a father who wants his daughter to be alive. Jesus is the Lord of these things. Each event has taken us to the very edge of human experience, where only God can make a difference. Jesus has exercised power and authority recognized as being reserved for God alone. Who can deny that he is the Christ, the Son of God? Surely it's worth us to consider that as we put our faith in him. Plenty do deny it. Even today, the majority of people deny it. Well, he was a good guy, he was a nice guy, he did nice things. He's not the Son of God. And even if he is, what is that even to me? Each of these people experienced Jesus in their life doing these wonderful things, and they had a faith. Did their faith grow over those next few years as Jesus continued his ministry? The faith of his disciples did, most of them. What about these people that Jesus had met? You ever wonder what happened to them? Did their faith develop? What's happening with your faith as you read through Mark's gospel? Surely he is worth you putting your faith and trust in him as you read through this book. Let's pray.